Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
One last breath. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
Imagine you're a polio patient in the 1950s, unable to breathe and terrified, unsure of where you are. A doctor slides you into a giant iron hatch, a coffin-like chamber suspended inside of the doctor's office. Sealed in up to your neck, you begin to hear compression sounds, and then, relief. You're able to breathe again. During the first half of the 20th century, this negative pressure ventilator was the state-of-the-art machine in life support technology, saving the lives of so many children who needed respiratory care, especially those who fell victim to, at the time, the deadly poliomyelitis, commonly known as polio. Today we're talking about the iron lung and the many children it saved, including Paul Alexander, who lived for over 70 years in an iron lung, inspiring others, helping others, and sharing his story. Though he died on March 11th, 2024, Alexander has become a testament to the power of the iron lung and the human spirit. To understand Mr. Alexander's incredible life, you have to understand the machinery that would become a part of his identity. The notion of the iron lung was born in 1670 when English scientist John Mayow came up with the idea of external negative pressure ventilation to treat acute and chronic respiratory failure. The idea, very simply, is that pressure is applied to the patient's torso to cause their lungs to expand, and by extension, drawing air into the patient's lungs through their airway, forcing inhalation. When the pressure on the torso is released, the chest naturally contracts, compressing the lungs and causing exhalation. In the 1800s and 1900s, devices were being workshopped and prototyped due to the rise in polio. 30 years later, the best version was made by Philip Drinker and Lewis Shaw, professors of industrial hygiene at the Harvard School of Public Health. Their respirator was first used on an 8-year-old girl with polio on October 12, 1928. The machine was powered by an electric motor with air pumps from two old vacuum cleaners. The air pumps changed the pressure inside a rectangular, airtight metal box, pulling air in and out of the lungs. The young girl recovered from an acute respiratory failure in less than a minute, which of course was an incredible thing. This life-saving event skyrocketed the, quote, Drinker respirator into medical fame and was quickly mass-produced for hospitals to use. In 1931, John Haven Emerson improved on the Drinker design by making the bed slide in and out of the cabinet and adding these kind of steampunk portholes to the sides that allowed access to the patient without loss of air pressure. But all was not right in iron lung land. Drinker and Harvard University felt the Emerson respirator was too similar to theirs and sued Emerson for infringing on their patents. Emerson won his legal battle in court, and Drinker and Shaw's many patents were declared invalid. The judge also agreed with Emerson that a technology that saved lives should be shared with everyone. And so the, quote, iron lung began being used and used and improved upon, especially by biomedical engineer Edward Both, who came up with a cheaper alternative to the Drinker and Emerson version that was distributed to hospitals around the world. Iron lung wards sprung up, where patients with respiratory treatment would all be in one space together for company and support. This was because, as you might imagine, time inside an iron lung was lonely, boring, and debilitating. Patients were almost fully incapacitated in the iron lung, getting bathed, having therapy, blood transfusions, managing their catheters, all through the machine's small portholes. For entertainment, a mirror could be attached above the patient's head so they could see what was happening around them, even reading books suspended in front of their faces if someone was able to turn the pages for them. In the 1940s and 50s, it was the height of the polio outbreak, and rows of iron lungs filled hospital wards. Most patients only use the iron lung for a few weeks or months, depending on the severity of their situation. But those ravaged hard by polio might have their chest muscles permanently paralyzed. According to the World Health Organization, one in 200 polio infections leads to irreversible paralysis. This meant, at this point in time, almost certain death. Enter Paul Alexander, an inspiring 6-year-old polio patient who would change our preconceptions of polio survivors and of the iron lung. More after the break.
Hi, hello, how are you doing?
Hello.
We're checking in.
We are checking in right now.
This is it.
You know what to do.
Yeah.
Say nothing.
Yeah.
Do nothing.
Say nothing. Do nothing. Just live your life like you've always been doing.
Ignore this.
Well, it's not going to stop us from saying hello to anyone who's listening, supporting us, spreading the good word of Ghost Town.
Hell no.
We thank you so much. Deep down inside and outside, most importantly.
Most importantly.
And we got some mayors.
Ooh, yeah, we do.
We got some mayors, and these mayors, they're a couple of inventors.
Oh, mad scientists?
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh.
They are inventors. This mayor, that's something to brag about, they are the inventor of the revolutionary hair-cutting device, the Flobee. Remember the vacuum you put on your head?
No.
Oh, you got to check out
the Flobee?
The Flobee.
Great name.
It was a way to cut hair that was a little vacuum put on your head. Apparently it worked. I mean, it worked for like basic haircuts.
It just sucked up the hair.
Yeah, it just sucked and chopped your hair.
Sucked and chopped and sucked and chopped.
Now, sucked and chopped was proposed as the slogan, but that didn't happen.
Okay.
But they were just lucky and fortunate that they revolutionized hair cuttery.
Mm-hmm.
That's Kat Jozell.
Hello.
This mayor invented the Snuggie.
Ooh, I know what that is. It's giant.
Like,
remember the
bell.
Age of the Snuggie? Remember the high time of Snuggies?
They should just sew it right into the couch.
Really? It's into my skin,
You can thank the queen of comfort, Ashley Mattson.
Hello.
This mayor, a fitness guru, invented the shake weight.
Oh, yeah. I had a couple of those.
Only used in irony.
In sketches.
Yes.
In sketches.
Would anyone actually use
comedy
it?
Comedy sketches.
I'm sure there was something to it. There probably did.
Any large, heavy objects that you have to move with your body.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, they're happy counting their billions. That's Casey Weber.
Hello.
This person, you like footwear?
Sure do.
Do you like economic travel?
Hell yeah.
Well, what about some wheelies? The sneakers where the wheels just drop out and you just start rolling.
Yeah, wow. We're really hitting like the early 2000s, like the end, the last phone numbers that you'd call on your TV screen to get some shit.
You just cruise around.
Wheelies.
Kids. Safe.
Kids just whizzing by me.
Safe and sound.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if something happens, please don't sue Kelly Meehan.
Hello.
This mayor invented cute little doll. But as we learned on Ghost Town, this doll would eat children.
Cabbage Patch Kids.
Snack time Cabbage Patch Kids. If you ever listen to that episode
where
the doll
boy
just starts eating the people, check that out.
All I see in my brain is like a red-haired Cabbage Patch Kid with their hair stringing, and then there's just human hair just coming like in a waterfall from their tiny little contraption mouth.
Well, you have one person to thank, and that's Matthew Clemens Leray.
Thanks a lot.
This mayor says, you want a rock? You want a lot of songs in one place? And you want to listen to it? iPod? No thanks. Check out Zune. Check out my Zune, baby. Listen to your MP3s on Zune.
I do not remember Zune.
You don't remember Zune?
I don't think so.
It was like another option beside like an iPod, I guess.
Great. Oh,
and
great.
I remember my friend had one at Zune, and then like He loved it, but like there was no upkeep for it because the company that made it, they were just like, we're done. We don't care about the Zune anymore.
Yeah.
Well, one person who still cares, that's Emma Hopkins.
Hello.
This mayor is like, huh, you like movies? That's interesting. Do you want to keep your movies on something that's extremely large and
delicate
and delicate and you need a separate machine for it? You really can't tell the difference in the film quality.
Mm-mm.
Well, then you might like the Laserdisc player.
Yeah.
Would you think? And again, my same friend with the Zune.
Oh my God.
Loved Laserdisc. Collected. the hell out of Laserdisc. And then we were talking about it. He's like, I was like, why did I collect all those Laserdiscs?
Oh, no. Now, though, I bet.
I think, I don't know if you, it read both sides. I don't know if you had to flip it or not.
You did. No, you did. Because I remember watching, I think I was dating some fucking dude in college and he had a Laserdisc. You know, it's like, he was like watching the, it's like, you just, you have to flip it like a record. It's like all the horrible things about a record with none of the benefit. It's the same quality. It's a pain in the fucking ass.
It has the word laser in it and disc.
It's like, cool, great. I guess I'll wait till you flip this thing while I sit on your futon and wonder when we're going to have sex.
Well, I guess if you want to thank someone for all that like trudged up drama, you can thank Marissa Rothermel.
Thanks, Marissa.
And our governor.
Ooh, yeah. The greatest inventor. The Benjamin Franklin of this podcast. You take a key and you put a kite on it. Who's going to get shocked?
It's not going to be our governor because she's higher above in a plane.
That's
again,
right.
In a plane. Right.
She's like, keys, I use fobs, first
yeah,
of all.
Yeah, yeah. She's like, I don't.
Fucking, my staff has handles that, but thank you.
Our governor, if you remember, was a silent partner in a huge restaurant chain. So huge. A little something called Planet Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone had Planet Hollywood
bomber
jackets.
Yeah. Ugh, we all wanted those purple. It was like purple and red and neon. And they had the burgers and the sunglasses.
And all the star power was not enough to keep that afloat.
No,
Willis, Sylvester Stallone, Eddie Murphy, right? Dan Aykroyd. And one other person, our governor, Avian Noble. If you want no ads, no chit-chat. Bonus episodes, just the good stuff, 7 days free. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
Paul Alexander was diagnosed with polio in 1952 during an outbreak in Dallas, where he lived. At just 6 years old, Alexander was paralyzed from the neck down and unable to breathe on his own. Doctors put Alexander into an iron lung, unsure of how long he'd last inside. After 2 years in the hospital, doctors weren't sure what to do next. Alexander was alive, but not thriving. Eventually, his parents made the decision to take Alexander and his iron lung home to live out the rest of his days in peace. But instead of dying, the change in environment made Alexander stronger and more hopeful. His optimism became infectious, and Alexander's family became more determined than ever to support him during his new phase in life, however unconventional that life had become. With the promise of getting his own puppy, Alexander pushed himself to learn a new way of breathing, breathing that would save him outside of the lung. Of course, this was temporary, but in a case of emergency, he could save himself by aggressively gulping down air, using his throat muscles to force air into his lungs, something called glossopharyngeal breathing, or, quote, frog breathing. This was especially helpful when the power went out, as it often did. When the power went out, friends, family, and neighbors would pump the mechanism's accordion-like bellows by hand, or Paul would necessitate frog breathing. To keep on top of emergencies like these, Alexander's father designed an alarm bell that Alexander could ring using his mouth if he needed urgent attention. As he grew up, Paul Alexander learned to write, to type, and to paint, using only his mouth and a stick. Now with the ability to express himself academically and intellectually, Alexander soared, and he eventually graduated with an economics degree from the Southern Methodist University. Even, for the first few years of his college education, living in the college dorms with the other students inside of his iron lung. He then went on to get a law degree from the University of Texas. After that, Alexander passed the bar exam and practiced law in downtown Dallas, all, again, within his iron lung. In his spare time, Alexander was an advocate for polio research and even wrote a book. Heartbreakingly, Alexander always struggled with getting adequate care. Quote, he needed a unique type of care. Not even professionals are trained to take care of a quadriplegic in an iron lung, says Philip, Alexander's brother. Most of the care was basic, shaving and feeding, for example. But to move him, you needed to be careful not to jam his finger and so on. Many left after a day or two. I remember going around once and asking a couple of assisted living centers if they could care for him, and the looks on their faces were priceless. With the rise of social media, Alexander took to Facebook, Instagram, and eventually TikTok, where he shared countless videos with unrelenting optimism and gained quite a following, with the public at large eager to consume his messages of hope, of joy, of the human condition. An incident in 2015 was a testament to his following and reach. At that point, Alexander's iron lung began to leak, creating a race against time to fix his machine. After a plea was posted on social media, responses came in from around the world, including one from a man named Bradley Richards, who lived 10 miles down the road from Alexander's apartment in Dallas. Richards had come into possession of two iron lung machines at a building clearance and was the owner of the local mechanical durability business environmental testing laboratory. On learning about Alexander's emergency, he immediately set about rebuilding one of the broken machines he had in his warehouse and swapped his refurbished lung for the damaged one at Paul's apartment. He wouldn't accept any money for his work. In March 2024, the Guinness Book of World Records declared Paul Alexander as the longest living iron lung patient in history. Quote, "If he didn't have really strong positive parents, he would have never made it. If he didn't have family and close relations all these years, he would have never made it," says Alexander's brother, Philip. "He was just a normal brother to me. We fought, we played, we loved, we partied, we went to concerts together. He was just a normal brother." With the constant struggle to find good care, back in 2022, Paul Alexander hired caregivers who took advantage of his situation. In November of that year, a GoFundMe was created to address this issue. About the previous caregivers, the GoFundMe reads, quote, "He was taken advantage of by people who were supposed to care for his best interests. This theft, combined with the high cost of health care, has left Paul with little money to survive. He struggles to maintain his iron lung, afford health care, and find housing that accommodates his needs. Paul lives in a small one-room apartment that does not have a window." Of course, with his now huge and vibrant and invested fan base, the GoFundMe generated almost $150,000, which went towards maintaining Alexander's iron lung, housing, and of course, healthcare. But in April of 2024, another tragedy struck. At that point, Alexander's social media manager posted a video saying he was rushed to the emergency room and hospitalized after contracting COVID-19. COVID would prove fatal to the wholly immunocompromised Alexander, and after being released from the hospital on March 11, 2024, the virus took Paul Alexander's life. But in the last days of his life, back at home, the 78-year-old still kept his spirits up. Says his brother Philip, "The night before he died, he just opened his eyes and looked at me and said, 'This is perfect.' Even at the end, I don't think he really realized what kind of effect he had. He wants people to remember that you can get through any struggle, and it's all about how you treat each other. That was his life's cause." Truly, Paul Alexander has become a testament to the power of the iron lung and the human spirit.